Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Athletics Football GM Podcast. And now, the Athletics Mike Sando and former NFL Executive of the Year Randy Mueller.
Welcome to this edition of the Football GM Podcast with me, Mike Sando of The Athletic, and Randy Mueller, the GM, the former Exec of the Year in the NFL, two-time GM. Randy, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great, Mike. Yourself?
I'm doing better than the Bears offense last night. Boy, that was that was a tough one. We got some great topics this week. We are sufficiently outraged about the Cowboys, and I think we have some good insights there. We have Tua time in Miami. I think that's a great one to discuss as he begins his career against the Rams, who we saw this week on Monday night. Bills and Patriots are playing. Let's talk about those offenses. There's a lot to unpack there. Antonio Brown heads to Tampa Bay. We're interested in that. Got a couple picks, Steelers-Ravens, Raiders-Browns. I don't know if we're going to pick Jets-Chiefs, Randy's, but 21.5-point spread, we got to talk about it. We'll have our Ask the GM segment, as usual, a good one there. Actually, about a GM job. Stay tuned for that one. Randy, let's get going on the Cowboys first. And we don't have to say on every podcast that we told you so before the season. I mean, I wouldn't think that would be good form if we just kept only pointing out the times when we were right. But I think one of our first podcasts was talking about how overrated this team was. They're the only team in the league that is winless against the spread this year, 0-7, which shows you there's still a gap between what people expect this team to do and what they actually are. This was different against the Washington football team in week 7. This was humiliating.
Yeah, this was a tough one. It seems like we always have the Cowboys on our radar, and it's not by choice, I don't think. It just seems like they've presented something for us to chat about every week. I mean, it's obvious there's a lot of blame to go around with America's team, right? I mean, we talked about the roster. Maybe he's a little bit overrated. You know, they lose their best player and their team leader. You know, they hire a Super Bowl coach, but really don't empower him like a Super Bowl coach. So there's plenty. But I found myself after seeing this on Sunday and their game with Washington, and the incident we're talking about really is the incident with Andy Dalton, who was cheap-shotted, I guess, is, for lack of a better word. Definitely an illegal hit put on him by John Bostic, and the lack of response that it generated from them. I felt like I felt really sad, not to turn this into a Dr. Phil show, but it was kind of sad, you know? I mean, there was no response. There was no heart. There was nothing that came of this. And I grew up a Cowboy fan, right? I've always loved the
Cowboys.
That's
what I was going to ask you about. I mean, yeah. you're still a human watching this stuff,
I
right?
Am. I mean, you know, yeah. Yeah. Whether I've been a GM or not, or a fan or not, I was a Cowboy fan growing up. And I remember the rivalry between the Washington and Dallas football teams. And gosh, this would have never happened back in the day. And maybe I'm old school, but this just didn't get a response that I was curious about. But when you take a step back and make you think about why, I think there's a couple things. One, I mean, I saw a group of independent contractors operating here. This is not a team. They have not come together as a team. And that shouldn't shock anybody. I mean, their record shows that, like you said, 0-7 against the spread. They have issues. But the fact that they haven't bought into any team concepts at all, I think it was evident by the lack of backing of Andy Dalton. You know, it's a struggle to get guys to come together when you don't have off seasons, and they didn't have one. So I think that's part of the reason. But this is a group that is up front on offense in particular, really struggling. And they didn't jump on anybody that hit their quarterback and knocked him out, I think, because they're all trying to do their own jobs. I mean, the offensive line is a mess, right? They've got guards playing center, center playing guards, tackles that shouldn't be playing. And so they're all in their own world. They're trying to go play to play on Sundays like it's paint by numbers, right? There's no artistic value here.
Absolutely, so that,
yeah. They didn't even think about protecting their quarterback because they're on level one. They're in first grade trying to learn, you know, hooked on phonics. So they're just not there yet.
And think about this. In this pandemic, these guys have never gone for a beer with Andy Dalton. They don't even know him. These guys haven't been over to Andy's house for film night. These guys don't know Andy's kids.
Right.
There's nothing there. Now, if that had happened to Dak, I think we would have had people running out there because this is their brother. But when you look at, you know, really who are the leaders on a team, who's respected on a team, it's always the guys who earn the most money and play the best ball. And when you look at Andy Dalton getting taken out, you would expect Tyron Smith and Zach Martin and used to be Travis Frederick and Lael Collins. Those guys should be right there. They're not in the game.
Right.
So you look at the highest paid guys on the Cowboys offense. It's Dak Prescott. He's out. It's Amari Cooper. He's a wide receiver. I mean, he's not some sort of, you know, gritty leader. It's Zeke Elliott. Okay. I mean, it's Zach Martin. He was out of the game with a concussion. Right. Tyron Smith, he's out for the year. Lael Collins, he's out for the season. So there's not this group to come rallying to your defense. And it really did drive home sort of the sadness of where Dallas is at, that through a combination of mismanagement of the team, through a combination of maybe not always having the right guys on the roster, through a combination of injuries, through a combination of the pandemic, of just what it means to be a team. You're not together. You're on Zoom.
No,
you know what I mean? If your best friend was only on Zoom, it wouldn't be the same as sitting in the fishing boat or whatever you do with your best friends.
Right.
You wouldn't have those shared experiences. And so I also thought, just from a football standpoint, that Andy Dalton slid late. I mean, it was this wasn't him being 3 yards out of bounds and the guy taking him over. I think there's some nuance in how the quarterbacks play now. I think they all expect to be protected.
Right.
And they go running up the middle of the field, and it's everyone else has to stop and get out of their way. And he slides at the very last minute. I actually, you know, Moose Johnson on the broadcast called this total disrespect for your opponent. One of the first ones in a long time I've seen that's inexcusable. And I suppose you can make that case. I just feel like I didn't feel like the guy was just savagely trying to kill the quarterback. I think Andy Dalton barely slid at the last minute, and he paid the price. So there's a lot of there's a lot of stuff going on around this.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack. There's no doubt about it. And I'm probably in the middle somewhere. I do think it was an illegal hit, but I do think it was a victim of timing that came into play. It was just kind of the perfect storm when it happened. But here's the next question: in order to change what's happening there, what do they do? I mean, let's just, we talked about every week something that needs to be changed with the Cowboys, but how do you fix this? That's the big problem and dilemma I have going forward, is how do they fix it? And can it, I don't know that it can be fixed this year, but even in the offseason, how do you fix this thing? It's crazy.
Well, look at, I talked about the highest paid guys on offense. You know, who are you building your team around? Here's the highest paid guys on defense. DeMarcus Lawrence, $21 million. Is that, I don't know, is he a great leader? Jalen Smith, 11. Tyron Crawford, 9. Everson Griffin is a rental, 6. That's your, you know, highest paid guys that you'd normally be looking to on the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, Sean Lee's out. You know, they don't really have an identity or maybe a strong leadership on that side of the ball. And I think, you know, this has been a team where Jerry Jones has been the leader, right?
Right.
And Jerry Jones has been the all-powerful guy. Well, guess what? The players told Jerry Jones this offseason, they'll kneel if they want to.
Right.
What's Jerry going to do about it? Jerry's not doing nothing.
No, Jerry, you're right.
How much power does Jerry have? What can he do?
Exactly right. I think you're talking about, like we just said, an independent group of contractors, and I don't think they have a lot of faith in really what Jerry's saying at this point, for one thing. I think talk is cheap. I think we're going to talk about another team soon in the podcast here in Miami, where there's a lot of faith in the front office. I just don't see any faith in this front office at all. There's definitely a disconnect. I do think you brought up a couple good names there that we should discuss. One is Sean Lee, and I think for one player, Sean Lee's as big of a missing object on defense as they've had, and it seems like that's gone the last 3 or 4 years. With his absence, they struggled to communicate, they struggled to lead, to get through hard times. Sean Lee is definitely a big a big leader. You mentioned Smith, the linebacker, 54. He's the guy we've all seen on film, not chasing the ball, not pursuing it 100%. So he can't lead anymore because that's a fraud, right? Everybody sees that on tape. So yep. I do agree there's some leadership issues. They lost a corner this year to Miami, a really young, good player. Miami identified him as an ascending player and signed him in the offseason. So they've taken some hits on defense, but they're going to have to fix this at some point, somehow. And I'm not sure the answers are in-house. Yep. I mean, Mike Nolan is an experienced veteran, longtime defensive coordinator, but he's taken a beating over this first 6 or 8 weeks.
Hey, did you see he got Tabasco? Did you see he got Tabasco sauce inside during the press conference?
Come on, talk about bad timing. I mean, that was crazy, yeah.
I wonder if he was
that
having
took
like
on
a...
the fly in the hair of Mike Pence type social media presence, you know?
It kind of made me want to have a catfish sandwich and put a little Tabasco on it. Yeah. But, yeah.
But that's how things are going, right?
That's yeah. how things are going. I want the video of that. Let's move on to more pleasant conversation here, you know, with the Dolphins going with Tua at quarterback. I think initially it was a little bit of a jolt initially. It certainly was for Ryan Fitzpatrick because he's sort of, right. you know, even though you know what the long-term plan is, you know, you're rolling with Fitzmagic, right? I mean, he's diving for first downs. He's a great inspirational leader. We got the beard on the screen. I think the team kind of bought into him for whatever extent you can buy into a guy who's not going to be the guy long-term. So they decide sort of organizationally to make this switch. I guess it is timed up with the bye. While they're 3-3 and they're a game, you know, whatever a game – you know, they're right there in this AFC East that's pretty jumbled. I probably would have done it later. I'm not, you know, outraged by it. Are you excited?
You know, initially I'm with you. I was taken back a little bit by the timing of it. But when you sit back and realize what they're doing, the message it sends, and how everybody else feels within that building, I think you do tend to get a little excited. I think all the analysis put aside, one statement for me, I think that I've read or heard kind of sets it the tone for it. I think they think, and when I say they, Brian Flores, Chris Greer, Ross, the owner, I think they think that Tua is better than Fitz for them right now. I don't think anybody would argue that the future is bright with Tua and that's where they need to go. But they made the decision right now he's better for him. And you say, whoa, wait a second, he's never played down. He threw 2 passes last week. Well, I think the players are genuinely excited about it. The more you read, the more you hear about him. This kid has earned everybody's respect. The decision makers have seen him day after day after day, what he does, the way he gets the ball out, the precision pinpoint accuracy he has, his legs in the pocket to get away from pressure. I do think he brings a lot to the table that maybe you take for granted in a 37-year-old Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know what you're going to get there, but you don't get the upside that Tua brings you. And I don't think it'll take long for people to see that either. I think you'll see that right away. It wasn't an easy decision. These decision makers made this, you know, you got to have some big kahunas to make a change like this at 3-3. Because like I said, your locker room is always your biggest critic. But I think they've come out of this with a lot of support in a locker room. They trust that the decision makers in Miami are doing the right thing. And when I say they, it's the players. So that's a big thing. And I if I'm a Miami guy or a Miami fan, I'm excited about the future and the fact that they've done this now, because I think it definitely does give them a chance for bigger aspirations than, say, a 7-9 or 8-8 record.
Absolutely. In 3 years, no one's going to be like, God, I wonder what could have been with Fitzmagic. You know, we really blew that opportunity. We were going to go all the way. At the same time, you know, had they left him in, they still could have gone from 3-3 to 3-6, right? That could have happened. And that may happen now. I mean, you know, Tua could come in, have some growing pains. I mean, he certainly should be rusty. I mean, I think people like to talk about, you know, oh, you got the bye week to get ready. Well, they're an injured team that you come out of your bye, you don't practice on Monday. You have Tuesday off for the players' day off. You have a walkthrough on Wednesday. You're off Thursday through Sunday, just the players are during the bye. You come back Monday. I mean, the guy was sick 3 weeks ago and missed practice, so I don't really buy that, wow, this guy's just been lighting it up in practice and we can all see it. I think those reps are precious. I think they've been going to Fitzpatrick. I think they didn't play Tua late in games when they were up by 20 points or more against San Francisco. And even in this last game, this last week. So I think there could be some bumps early on. I think it's a move that's almost like was preordained, like they had thought about it before the season, that will make the switch at the bye. It wasn't entirely comfortable move to make because Fitz has been playing probably better than expected. I agree. Right. They probably think that Tua can play at least that well soon. So that's a risk they're taking and probably fine. They're going to play the Rams right out of the gates, one of the top five defenses in the league that hits the quarterback a lot. So that's interesting to me. I mean, it could look ugly.
Well, I think there'll definitely be a learning curve. I've never seen one of these guys come in that hasn't had a learning curve and at least a step back at some point during the process. I think the best thing Tua has going for him is I really think this is a decent team. I've said it from the outset. Miami has really gotten better the last 6 or 8 months with the acquisition of talent, and now it's coming together. Brian Flores has proved he is a coach to be reckoned with, and he can bring guys together, and these guys believe in him. You can see that. You look at their defense, they're one of the best third down defenses in the league. They have a great blitz package and pressure, you know, package, and it doesn't always show up in numbers after a game, but this is a good defense, and I think it's a group that is only going to come together through moves like this because they are, you can tell, a tight-knit group, and I think that's a positive, another positive for the Dolphins.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about, though, I got two things for you on this that I think are really interesting on Miami. One, I want to talk just a little bit more about Tua, so we'll get to that. But I want to set the table on how you build a team, because we've been critical of teams when they get rid of good players, right? I mean, that's been a theme that we've talked about. They're hard to replace. This team got rid of good players initially. I mean, not that Laremy Tunsil is unbelievable, but Minka Fitzpatrick is a, you know, defensive player of the year candidate. They really did the sort of tanking thing almost. I mean, they ended up being better than we expected. But now we're saying a year later, well, we like what they're doing. So did they do it the right way early? I mean, is this a well thought out process?
I think it's definitely a thought out process. But here's the other thing you got to remember. Houston gave him 2 first-round picks for Laremy Tunsil. I don't even think Jeremy Tunsil would fight that trade. I think I read where he knew he had to be traded for that amount. And the other thing was the Minka Fitzpatrick one does, you know, that was a little concerning for me because he's a heart and soul guy. As you're seeing in Pittsburgh, this guy is already become a leader there on a defense that may be the best defense in football. So that was a hard one. I think that was a personal issue that Minka had with the way they were using him. They just couldn't settle on where to line this guy up. And he had just gone through 4 years of this at Alabama, too. Where is he, a corner? Is he a safety? What is he? Is he a nickel guy? And he could never get really good at any one thing because of the kept moving him around factor. So I think that was a little personal issue there. I don't think that was necessarily part of the plan. Pittsburgh came along, offered him a first-round pick for him. It worked out for them as well. So sometimes you do make some of these moves. I do think they knew they had replacement players in place when they made these moves. So that's a big issue as well, is they had a plan. Sometimes you just have to go with the flow when the supply and demand when it comes out where you can get 3 first-round picks for those two players, that's hard to turn down.
Yeah, I get that. I guess it's good for me, you know, that Miami has a plan. So that's better than what they've had in recent years. They have a plan. I don't always like all aspects of it. And some of that New England-y get rid of guys if they don't want to be there right away. Hey, it's your job. When Kiko Alonso or Minka Fitzpatrick are your two best players on defense, hey, it's your job to get the most out of him, not say, oh, you don't want to be part of the program? Fine, you're out of here. I don't know about that. So there's a balance. Back on Tua, I'm going to give you I talked to a lot of people in the league, and so I've kind of got these notes, and I want to bounce a couple of these observations on him off of you and then get your thoughts. So one of the top coaches I know who has really studied him, this is what he said about Tua. He can move enough, really good arm, super accurate, smart, can move enough in the pocket side to side, see things, make accurate throws. He's one of the most accurate passers I've seen with making an adjusted throw. Not necessarily just throwing it out or throwing the guy running across the field, moving in the pocket and then being able to make the throw over a defender in a small window. He really excels at that, has a gift for that. And that, to me, is what playing quarterback is all about in this league. On the downside, different people I spoke with. He gets real shy when it gets noisy. 5 big games last 2 years in college, went 3-2, played well in one of them. There was chatter that he had maybe even taken himself out of the Mississippi State game. We overanalyze these guys, Randy, because we don't have enough information always to project. What do you think of those observations, and where are you at on Tua?
I think there's probably truth in all those observations, to be honest with you. I see the upside. I see the question marks as well. I'm good with Tua. I think I wish he were bigger. I think his physical stature is the one thing that bothers me a little bit. I just don't think he's a big guy, and therefore I do think he's susceptible to some injuries. The noise factor, I guess we'll find out. I mean, it's going to get noisy. I think the difference probably in some of those games that those coaches mentioned when he struggled was the pocket clean. I think he does need to operate again, mainly because of lack of ideal physical stature. He needs to operate from a clean pocket. There's some others in this NFL that are playing well, though, that are getting through that, but they're going to have to do a good job up front of keeping him clean. Having said that, I think they've given up 10 sacks in 6 games, but they're playing some young, inexperienced offensive linemen in Miami, so I think the future bodes well for him, but I think the key was he can get away from pressure just enough. I don't think this guy's going to run loose and be Josh Allen outside the pocket. But he can alter his feet. He can throw from different planes in the pocket, and the ball comes out really quick regardless. So a lot of pluses. I mean, time will tell. I'm good with Tua. I think he's a good player. And I think this group will give him the things that he does well in order to succeed early.
Yep. You mentioned Josh Allen there. Good segue into our next segment, which we have the Bills and Patriots playing this week. In my pick six column this week, I wrote about the Patriots on offense. And let's start with the Bills, though. I mean, I think the first three, four games of the season, the first three games this year, they were averaging 31 points a game on offense, third in the league. People, not me, not you, talking about Josh Allen, is he an MVP candidate? I mean, now they've come back to earth, which to me isn't shocking, but what do you see with Buffalo sort of leveling off here offensively, and it's not so easy?
Yeah, I'll say a couple things. One, I'm all in on Josh Allen. I've loved him since being at Wyoming. We've told some of the stories about him coming out and our evaluations when that happened. I haven't faltered from that. I still think he's the guy to take them to the promised land. I think he's a great fit for Buffalo. But we also have talked about this is a league of adjustments. It's a league of defensive coaches especially figuring things out. And teams have done that now a little bit with Buffalo. They have figured them out. Now it's going to be up to Buffalo. It's their move on the chessboard. I think that the key thing for me on when talking about Josh Allen, really that means the Buffalo offense because it all runs through him, is the red zone. And they obviously, the red zone, they struggled last week, but they had 10 possessions versus the Jets. They never punted the ball. So it's not like anybody kept them from moving the ball. There were no three and outs. There was nothing like that. But they've got to be more efficient in the red zone. And I think that's a spot where young quarterbacks, the learning curve might be the longest because teams do change things up in the red zone. Things get confined. They sit on deep routes in defensive backs do. So that's a little bit of a different approach that I think he's going to take some time to master. And do I think he will? Yeah, I think he will. But those 10 possessions they had against the Jets, and we know the Jets aren't the monsters of the Midway on defense either, but they did score. I mean, they kicked 6 field goals, I guess, and missed 2 others. But I think it's coming. I think there's still some wild carny ride fallout when you watch Josh Allen, and that's going to be Josh Allen. He's going to make you pull your hair out at times, but he's still not turning the ball over per se. He's not making the crucial errors, maybe like he did a year ago. But I like him. I'm good with them. I think they have to make some adjustments now offensively, especially in the red zone, to get him to the next level. And when I say they, that's them as a team.
Yep. My concern for Buffalo is really their defense isn't great anymore. Maybe it will be, but that is an issue.
Yeah.
That's such a nice calming effect for a quarterback. You can have ups and downs, and you can live with them because your defense is going to make the stop. And when you play the Jets, it doesn't really matter because they can't score. But I have felt like for them, ultimately, I believe that Josh Allen has too much of those variations that it's going to cost you when you play the good teams in the playoffs, that when he gets cornered in an alley, things go haywire. And that's fun in week 4 against the Rams when you blow a 28-3 lead and win the game anyway. It's fun.
Right.
It's not fun when you're playing Houston in a loud stadium in the playoffs and you blow a 16-0 lead and completely melt down. So I want to see that type of consistency. And if you don't have the defensive side just automatically holding that opponent to 20 points, then to me those ups and downs on offense are going to be exaggerated. And I don't think people are talking about it with Buffalo's defense because it's sort of a weird defensive year. Maybe they're going to be fine long term. But that's what I would get there. Now, that segues, I think, into the Patriots as well, because last year they were amazing on defense and special teams, especially early in the year, and it helped buoy them up a little bit.
Right.
They're not horrific there, but it's not quite as great. And now offensively, they don't have answers. Do you think that we have seen the best of Cam Newton in New England, or do you think they're going to ride this out and be okay?
Well, I think it's going to be a struggle for New England, I'll be honest with you. And I don't think that comes as a giant surprise. We talked about it here. Their run game, their quarterback-based run game, can only do so much, especially when you combine that with an offensive line that's really the shambles right now. So I think it does start up front their problems. They struggled last week on tape, Mike. They were struggling to pick up basic defensive, not blitzes, basic defensive formations, and their protection scheme was crazy. I mean, I'd never seen them with that level of lacking communication up front. It was just a struggle for me, and I even saw it on their defense as well. I really think this is a complicated setup scheme-wise on both sides of the ball, and it was proven that they need to practice. They really need to practice to get down what Belichick's trying to do on defense and what Josh McDaniels is trying to do on offense. They need reps, and I don't think they're getting the ample amount of reps, and that goes with Cam as well. I mean, obviously Cam hasn't been the same since he came back from the COVID absence. He, to me, has looked old and rusty and kind of not he always brought a little juice to the game when he was right, when he was healthy. There was just no juice. And then when I watch him on tape, his legs, to me, are failing him in his fundamentals of passing the football. They struggled, again, with elementary passes that NFL quarterbacks make in their sleep last week. He just couldn't get it from point A to point B. So that's a struggle. I just don't know the upside or where the upside is in this offense to get it fixed. They haven't even been able to regenerate what they started the season with in week one and two since Cam came back from the COVID. So they'd be happy with that. And again, we thought that would have to evolve, that offense we saw early in the season. So still some issues there. I don't know if it's going to get fixed. I think this is one of those things where let's just start with the premise of, didn't they lead the league in opt-outs before the season started for COVID?
No doubt.
Patriots roster was really in flux before they even snapped the ball. So I'm not making excuses for them, but start with that premise. I think they had 9 or 10 guys opt out, and some of these guys were good players. They were definitely starters in the mix. And so there was a struggle to replace that before the season started, and it's kind of just gone downhill.
And I think Cam is an emotional momentum player. You know what I mean? And, he had it going good, and I think it smiles. And then that COVID, he can't play. It's a national game against Kansas City, and suddenly everyone's looking at him like, well, what did you do? How did you get it? You know, and I think he lost some momentum there. And then who knows what the physical effects are of having been sick, right? I mean, he may feel fine. He may not be the same. It could be different for everybody. And then you come back into a tough situation, and you know, we can call him a momentum player. Critics would call it a front runner, but he brings the juice when it's when you have, you know, oranges in your hand. He makes the juice. He doesn't go get the oranges and bring the juice. So he may not be the guy to boo you up when things are going poorly. And I think that'll be a test of him, you know, and them as they move forward. And let's face it, they play a couple games. They play Buffalo and the Jets. It wouldn't shock me at all if they won both of them. You know, I mean, just where those teams are. So we'll see where they go. But I think we have confirmation that the best days of New England, when they really were that going to be that championship type team, are over, and it's going to be a totally different team.
Well, and the elephant in the room is no TB12, right? So it's a complete different makeup. And we said for years in the league that this was an average team that Tom just always brought together and connected the dots for them and covered for all the mistakes they did make. Obviously, they don't have that, and that's the giant factor as well.
Yep, and Tampa Bay does have that. We're going to – your segue – this is not planned, folks, but Randy is just – like the last segment, he mentions Josh Allen, then we go into that. Now he mentions Tom Brady and our – right on cue, we want to talk about Antonio Brown signing with the Buccaneers. He actually played for the Patriots a game last season. It's interesting. We had a little roundtable discussion on The Athletic, me and some of our other writers, and I felt like the guy who was – maybe I'm just a jaded add to the roster guy. I felt like the most positive guy on the move. I kind of felt like, I don't know, maybe I'm not, I don't overly worry about wrecking the locker room and all that type of stuff. I just look at it like, hey, you got a chance to get a guy who might be the best receiver on your team in 3 weeks. Am I wrong, Randy?
3 weeks, heck, he might be the best receiver right away because he's healthy. That's the thing. I mean, let's set aside the character stuff, and I'm not making light of any of the stuff that he's had to deal with character-wise or the moral, you know,
to me, that's
discussion.
A different conversation.
Yes.
We can have
yeah.
that. I'm
right.
appalled by what he
yes.
did, but he's eligible to play under
that's
the
correct.
Rules of the league, and he's playing. We're analyzing that.
Yeah, and from that standpoint, I see a difference maker, and I'm betting that this guy's going to be in good shape, and the kind of receiver he is, I think, complements the Mike Evanses, the Chris Godwins, the, you know, all these kind of players are a little bit different. Scotty Miller, this guy's a complete receiver who can change games and play inside, play outside, play all kinds of positions, and run different kind of routes. Mike Evans is a great player, don't get me wrong, but he's a bigger, stronger, build to his speed kind of guy. The little receiver that plays in the slot that they've got, you know, good mileage out of, Scotty Miller, totally different receiver. This guy's a little more like Godwin, AB, in that I think just from a skill set standpoint, and that's how I read these guys, just from his skill set, he's going to be, I think, maybe Tom Brady's first option when he gets off the bus. And having said that, these other guys aren't healthy, and that's the reason, according to Bruce Arians, that's the reason they signed him. And their thought process all along was, we weren't sure we could use Antonio Brown and all the reasons where we just talked about. But the hook for them is this guy is healthy, and he's ready to go, and he's a Pro Bowl receiver. So I don't think he's going to hurt their locker room. I really don't, Mike. I don't think this guy's I think anything they structured contract-wise, if there's even an inkling of him going sideways in the locker room, they'll just cut him and move on. They don't.
Yeah, absolutely. You always look at who has the power in these relationships, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like Le'Veon Bell going to Kansas City. It's totally different than when he goes to the Jets with a huge contract. I mean, he's not – Andy Reid can get rid of him in 5 seconds, and I think the Bucs can do that. Their general manager, Tom Brady, could do that too, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think they'd be unanimous in that if he does anything, boom, pull the trigger, cut the cord, we're moving on.
Yeah, but that's an interesting component, though, because I'm joking. Obviously, Jason Light's their general manager and Bruce Arians is their coach, but they signed him because of Tom Brady. Okay, Bruce Arians didn't want to have him, didn't want to do it. That was on the record. They can try to say that he had changed his mind because guys are hurt. They signed him because Tom Brady really wanted him. And you could easily hear Tom Brady saying, hey, I don't have a lot of time. Are we in? Are we all in? Are we doing this?
Right.
Or are we not? And I think it's already a little bit of a dynamic on that team where Mike Evans probably knows that or senses that, I mean, Chris Godwin is becoming their best receiver, may already be their best receiver.
Right.
So I think there could be guys looking around a little bit, and yet I don't think that's going to unravel a team if you're winning. I feel like this can still be something that is managed within that dynamic, and that as long as there's production, there's not going to be the downside. Do you agree?
Yeah, it definitely gives them depth at a position of need, without a doubt. And guess what? I'll bet you Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and these guys that have been nicked up, and I'm not questioning that, I'll bet you they come back sooner than later now, because there's only one ball, right? And everybody wants it. And AB's healthy. They'll see in practice
Gronk.
After about 2 or 3 days. Gronk, the same thing. Gronk's, you know, crying for his throws now as well, so in a good way. So it definitely brings to light some depth. And how about this? We're finding out that depth really means something. We've always known this, but the Chiefs add Le'Veon Bell. Tampa Bay adds this guy. I mean, the rich just keep getting richer in this league if you're willing to take a little bit of a risk. You can't tell me that half the teams in the league couldn't use Antonio Brown right now.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so
but
gotta,
not every.
You, You got to give them a little credit that they're willing to take the jump to do it. And what's wrong with being all in? Everybody says, oh, the Bucks are all in for 1 year. So what? Let's win 1 year.
We're
I'd rather be all in
year.
For 1 year than irrelevant for five, you know.
Absolutely. I like taking swings and bringing a guy in and putting those other guys on notice. Fine. They're not happy with it. They'd rather not have it. Fine. Yeah. We'd all rather not have things that make us uncomfortable and make us have to be better, right? But it makes you have to be better once you get beyond the, you know, the moral implications of this, which I think are real and are a different conversation.
Yeah.
You know.
He made his debut last year with the Patriots. I think it was in week two. And I think that was the first time he played. Four catches, 56 yards, a touchdown, you know, in a big way. I don't think people are going to have to wait long to see the impact of Antonio Brown on the field. That's for sure.
Yep.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I guess we do have to mention our picks from last week,
Yeah, I figured
Randy.
You'd bring this up.
both of us agreed. We both took Pittsburgh, and we gave the points, I believe, and we won that.
Yep.
So we got Pittsburgh, beat Tennessee, made us nervous. I did take Tampa Bay over the Raiders. You took the Raiders, and then you couldn't remember if you did that because I think you regretted it. But.
Yeah. You know how this works. I'll tell you what, and I said this in my blog last week on my own website. I hate picking games, and I know we need to, and it's kind of fun, but it makes me watch games different on the weekend. Yeah. All of a sudden, I'm rooting for. Why am I rooting for this team? I
you're
could
rooting
care less.
To be right. Yeah, you're
I'm just rooting, I'm rooting for not misleading others. If somebody does take it to heart and say, "Hey, Randy said this," or "Mike said that," I like to give them good information. So it kind of ruins my weekend picking these games, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting soft, but that's just the way I feel.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back this week. We got Steelers, Ravens by 5.5, and I felt like the Steelers were a good pick to win the division before the season. Now, I wanted to see how Ben came back, but I got no. I'll take the Steelers in 5.5 against any team in the league right now, anywhere. We can go play in the parking lot.
Yeah,
no problem with that. I feel like this is a team that's been sitting there hearing about how great Baltimore is, and Baltimore has been great. I don't think Baltimore is quite as great as they've been. For whatever reason. I don't think they're just clicking as much. So give me the Steelers, give me 5.5 points, and we'll see how it goes. What say you?
Yeah, I'm jumping on the same train with you. How about this? These two teams lead the league in quarterback hits. They've hit the quarterback more than any teams in the league. Pittsburgh 64, Baltimore 63. I think it's going to be a fascinating game from that standpoint. My question is, do the Steelers alter their rush to not rush Lamar Jackson so much and to keep him in the pocket? Do they throttle back, you know, their edge rushing to work on containment as much as anything else? Because that's where they want Lamar Jackson, is in the pocket, right? They don't want him out on the edge. They don't want him running out of the pocket. So I'm wondering if this isn't a week we see a little mush rush and, you know, just kind of keep him right there and make him beat him from the pocket. I think it's a fascinating matchup. Obviously, it's a divisional matchup. These division matchups, there's no secret. Everybody knows, you know, all the details. They know all the secrets. They know where the bones are buried for these teams in their same division. But I'm with you. I'm going with the Steelers, and I can't believe. You sure you looked at that right? Getting 5.5 points? That's crazy.
I checked it again today. I mean, I looked yesterday, and I was just like, what do people really think?
Right.
You know, I don't see that. So, you know, They got to get some hits on Lamar Jackson. I always laugh when people say, you know, Lamar Jackson runs, but he doesn't really get hit. What film are you watching? Yeah. I mean, this guy turns back to the middle of the field. You know, I mean, he runs like a running back half the time. And so I think it's very important for Pittsburgh is a rally to the ball type of team. That they're going to miss Devin Bush at their inside linebacker spot, but they've got to get some hits on Jackson, make him uncomfortable. I think they can do it enough. Like I said, we'll go with the Ravens there, and we'll take we'll go with the Steelers there and take the points. Raiders Browns are favored by 3. Are you going to stick with your boy Derek Carr again this week, or are you going to come off? I'm not telling you my pick first. I want to hear.
Here's my theory on this. If you mess with me 1 week, I'm dumping you quick. I'm going the other way. I'm taking the Browns, and here's why. I just think they're going to be able to run the ball, and I think they'll run it down the Raiders' throat and control. What do they say? The best defense is a good running offense. So I think the Browns will do that. The Browns have a bye the following week, so I think this is their last chance to put a stamp on the first half of the season, and I guess I trust Kevin Stefanski to have them ready. I think there will be more points scored in this game than most might, but I'm going with the Browns. I think the Browns have a pretty good formula, and I don't think they're at their tip-top form yet, but they're on their way. They showed last week that Baker can convert opportunities that come his way. I think the thing that Baker struggles with is when teams really pressure him and come after him. I don't see the Raiders doing that. The Raiders are one of the least quarterback hitting teams in the whole league. So I think he's going to have time. I think the play action comes into play then even better. And it'll be a close enough game where play action and the run game, Kevin won't get away from that. So I'm taking the Browns in the matchup with the Raiders.
Yep. I'm going to go with the Raiders. I'm going to take the points. I feel like the Raiders last week, it wasn't talked about enough what a big deal it was to have your offensive line in that COVID protocol, not practicing. You don't know till the game if you're going to play. And by the way, you're playing Todd Bowles' defense, which is coming at you. They have like 14 guys on the field. They made Aaron Rodgers look uncomfortable. I think the Raiders also, kind of like Cleveland, know what they have at quarterback. Mm-hmm. They don't dislike it. It's okay. But they know how to protect it. And they have a great back. Both these teams have good backs. I think both these coaches are good play callers. I think Gruden's an excellent play caller. It got away from them against Tampa. They're playing Tom Brady. Tom's got it going. I don't think that Baker Mayfield is Tom Brady, so I will take the Raiders and the 3 points. They'll control it. Browns will go into their bye probably better than we thought they were going to be or as good as we thought they were going to be, but not the team that's going to stack them week to week. We'll see how that goes. Now I'm betting on Derek Carr, but that's just the way I see it. I don't know if we're going to pick Jets Chiefs, but I just think it's notable that the Chiefs are favored by 21.5 points. So
I'm going to say this. It's not enough points for me to bet on the Jets. So we make fun of 21.5 points. I'm not taking it. I'm going the other route. Keep going. What did we talk about? Maybe get up to 24, 24.5. You might get my attention, but.
Yep. I'm going to we do have listeners, though, who do bet on these things. I'm going to give them here's my research. OK, here's my gambling research on this point spread.
This and $3 will get you a Starbucks.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chiefs have covered 68% of the time in Mahomes' starts. OK, 68. That's pretty good. What happened the other times they were really huge favorites? Right. So they were favored by 16.5 over the Cardinals in 2018. They only won by 12. They were favored by 14.5 over the Raiders in 2018. They won 35-3. They were favored by 14 over the Raiders that same year. They won by 7, so didn't. That's 2 out of 3 big spreads they didn't cover. 11.5 over the Raiders in 2019. They won 49. So, okay, they're 2-2 in the big point spreads against the spread. And the other one, 11.5 over the Patriots. They won by 16. This is a whole nother number.
Right.
So they have won by 21 points or more, or they won by more than 21 points 6 times with Mahomes in 43 starts. That's not that many, 6 out of 43, when you think of a team that really can run it up. They beat the 2018 Bengals, the 2018 Raiders, the 19 Raiders, the 20 Broncos, the 19 Broncos, and the 19 Bears. So a lot of division games there.
Yep.
I don't think the Jets can score against anybody. So I would probably...
You mean literally or... Literally?
Yeah. I think that I... In fact, I'm going to pick this game. I'm going to pick this game, and I'm going to take the Chiefs that they win by 22 or more points, which I normally would never do because I don't think they can get over 10. And I just see it being a, what do you think? Is it a 31-9? Does that get me there? 31-9 would do it. I'm going to say it's a 31-9 final score and the Chiefs cover the spread.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you. I think in the, and don't hold me to this, you might know the answer to this. In the second half last week, the Jets had 4 yards. Is that correct? They had no first downs, and it was a crazy number that they threw out there on offense, and I think that was it in the Buffalo game.
They were really impressive yards, though. Those four yards were
hard-earned,
really
4 yards. I mean, how can you bet on that?
Randy, you're not diving into this pool, though. I notice you're just sort of dipping your toe. You're not coming with me to bet on this game, so this will be my bonus game. Let's hit our Ask the GM question.
It's time for Ask the GM.
We always solicit questions from listeners, and we've sort of been ruminating on this a little bit before, like, with GM jobs. But, Randy, you've been a GM. If right now you could have the Atlanta Falcon GM job, where you have an older Matt Ryan, he's still pretty good, but you know, maybe you're not sure in the future, in that division, which is interesting. Or you could have the Houston GM job, where you get Deshaun Watson, but some other question marks. Which job are you taking and why?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think whether you're a GM or a head coach, it's a fun discussion. I guess for the GM from that seat, I probably look at what's above me as compared to what's below me. I have confidence in that I can find the right players and build the right team. I mean, obviously Deshaun Watson is a lot younger, going to be around for a lot longer, but I still see a lot of pluses in Matt Ryan. I think he's still got 2 or 3 years left in him. And when I talk about, you know, not necessarily the players, but the rest of the team in place, you're talking about in Atlanta, Arthur Blank, obviously really smart man, been around forever in the business world, has come a long way since he bought the Falcons, 15 years ago or whatever. And then you also include Rich McKay as his president, and I guess the interim GM now, used to be the GM in Tampa. I think that's a combination that I would sign up to be a part of without a doubt. I think those guys in the room assure, let me just use my example, it assures that I'm not the smartest guy in the room. And I think that's a plus going forward. I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room. That's just not my philosophy. Not that that's saying much in my case.
You're the smartest guy in this room.
Yeah, from Northern Idaho. But anyway, it is what it is. And I think that's a big plus in setting the table for Atlanta's success going forward. So yeah, they've struggled the last couple of years, but I still see Atlanta as being a desirable spot, a desirable team. And when you consider the combination of ownership, team president, also with Matt Ryan and a few of the playmakers they have, I think that is a great job. And I think somebody will end up in a spot there that really gives them a chance to succeed. And if they don't, it'll be their own fault. And that's not to say anything bad about the Texans job. There's just a lot more complications with the Texans job. You know, they've hired a search firm to help them find the right guy. Well, I got news for you. Rich McKay is not going to need a search firm to find the right people to help him. So there's a difference in really NFL acumen. You know, and maybe Cal McNair becomes one of the great owners in the league. Obviously, his dad was very respected, but this is new to Cal. They've got some internal agendas at work there. You can already read that from the outside. So I just think that makes that a little murky, makes it a little cloudy. And therefore, I think the Atlanta job probably at this point is a better job for the long haul.
Yeah, and I would look at the dynamics in that division are interesting to me, too. Drew Brees, near the end, they're going to be having a big rebuild in New Orleans, probably, a little bit of a reset. Tampa Bay is obviously all in. They're going to be tough right now. Maybe they're tough next year, but that's not going to last forever. Carolina's going to be interesting. I think with Matt Rhule there, that's going to be a rival for you in Atlanta. So that would be an interesting opportunity. They just haven't been able to get it right on defense there. You know, even though they've had, that was one of the notes in my column on Monday, they haven't had a top 10 defense the whole time that they had Dan Quinn and Mike Smith, two defensive coaches, and they've been top 10 on offense the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
So weird. You just got to get in there. As a GM, you'd be saying, hey, look, I can find some defensive ends. I can get that side of the ball fixed. And we can be a good team. I think it's going to have to, because you're going to have Julio Jones, you know, winding down and Matt Ryan next few years. So good philosophical exercise there. Our time's up. You can find me, Mike Sando, on Twitter at SandoNFL. You can find Randy at RandyMueller_. And we'll see everybody here next week.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.